Learning Mancunian with Andy Tate and Jose Mourinho.
Right, Jose, you're the only manager to have won the Premier League, Champions League, the FA Cup and Europa League.
You're not wrong, mate.
So in one word, how does it feel to be a winner?
That would be buzzing.
Correct.
Mint.
BT Sport will show 42 Premier League matches, all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games, plus up to 24 Emirates FA Cup matches. Four competitions, one venue. BT Sport.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome to Let's Talk Tribe. This is your host, Jason Lukart. This is episode 12. It's Wednesday night. The Indians are coming off a disappointing series at home against the Royals, just lost 2 of 3 after winning the first game. And so the mood not quite as bright as it was 48 hours ago. 77-68 right now, two games out of the wild card at the moment. The Rays, who are holding that second spot, are in the 10th inning right now with Boston. So maybe by the end of the podcast tonight, I can give you updated standings, which is, I'm sure, what you came to the podcast for. Anyway, losing the last two to the Royals, and at this point, regardless of what the Rays do, the Tribe have fallen half a game behind the Yankees, which is my nightmare scenario, and tied with Baltimore, 2.5 games back. The Royals are 2.5 games, never mind, sorry. The Royals are now half a game back of the Indians, and after seemingly being out of it a week or two ago, we're right back in the thick of things. Anyway, still very much in contention for one of the two wildcard spots. The Rangers are stumbling, so in some ways both wildcard spots are in play. Anyway, I want to get to my guest this week, who is an LGT regular, an LGT contributor, in fact, and sort of the site's unofficial or semi-official and maybe even fully official historian. My guest this week is Dean Klubnik. Dean, welcome to the show.
Good evening, Jason.
Now, you're out west, so it's not quite as late there. Do you like living on the West Coast for baseball in terms of game times and things like that?
Well, since I moved to the West Coast when I was a little kid, I moved to L.A. when I was 10. I'm used to the East Coast games starting at 4 or 5 o'clock, so it's not a big deal to me.
Yeah, I lived out west for a couple of years, and I never quite got used to it. I liked it. I was a bigger football fan back then, and I liked it for football because football started closer when I woke up. But I never got used to having the baseball games so early.
Football is great on the weekends because you start at 10 in the morning and go till midnight. Not a big deal.
Yeah, so. Exactly. I'm a grown up. Like I'm not sleeping in till 11:30, right in time for kickoff anymore. So it'd be nice to have football start earlier, but I don't follow football that closely anymore, so that doesn't matter much to me. So you said you moved out west when you were 10. So were you already an Indians fan at that point?
Oh, definitely. I grew up in Cleveland proper, near Lakewood. And so when I was 10, I moved to L.A., and I had already had the Indians, Browns, Cavaliers, and Buckeyes in my blood.
So what era was that? What era did you come of age as a fan in?
In my relatively young youth, it was in the mid-70s. So the days of, I distinctly remember the Frank Robinson era pretty well.
Sure.
So,
do you have what I was going to ask. Who was your guy back then?
My guy? I played second base in like T-ball or whatever the smallest level was. And so right. I was drawn to Dwayne Kuiper. guy couldn't hit a lick, but he was supposedly a really good fielder.
He hit one home run. That's a lick.
I know. But I always liked him growing up. I was not a big fan of Manning per se. I thought he was all right. I liked Eckersley before he got traded away.
Yeah. Yeah, he had some pretty impressive seasons with the team back when he was a starting pitcher. I remember him mostly as a reliever. I'm a little younger than you. But looking back at the back of baseball cards and seeing what he did as a starter. Bringing things forward to modern times, especially after these last two losses of the Royals, how do you feel about the Indians' chances this year?
Well, I've always been more conservative than most of the other LGTers out there. I think we have a shot, but I don't think it's a great shot. I never even thought it was a great shot 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago or even a week ago. Obviously, those wins last week helped to get us right back in it. But the hitting has been so atrocious since the All-Star break. The pitching just can't afford to give up more than three runs if we want a chance to win. And that's really not conducive. Even the worst teams can score three runs. So.
Yeah, the first couple games against the Mets, Friday and Saturday, the bats got back into gear and sort of letting myself think maybe they were going to get going. But it's been, right back to what it's been for most of the second half. And you're right. I mean, the margin for error for the pitchers is so low right now. And the pitching's been really great for a couple of months now. I mean, I think way better than any reasonable Indians fan would have guessed. And it's frustrating that it's been semi-wasted by so many hitters going so cold at the same time. Are there, when you're watching the Indians or following a game or checking a game, are there players right now you're any more or less confident than the others in terms of, who you do or don't want at the plate in a big moment?
Well, right now, obviously the guy we want hitting with any scoring chances, Yan Gomes. The guy is just hitting ridiculous lately.
Right.
But I'm still confident in both Carlos Santana and Kipnis. I have zero faith in Stubbs or Giambi, or even Bourne for that matter. I'm hoping that the return from paternity leave springs Brantley back into action. I have a feeling he was nervous about his first child, so that probably contributed a little bit to it.
Right.
So
that's an interesting point. I think oftentimes, I don't want to say the average fan. I don't know what the average fan thinks, but I feel like a lot of fans sort of overlook the fact that all of these guys – are guys, and the ones who have family, the same way, a teacher, a firefighter, anyone else is going to, be distracted at work because of family stuff. They're not immune from that sort of thing. So someone like Brantley, with a child on the way, that's an interesting observation, that his mind might not have been quite as fully focused on the game as it would normally be. I want to go back. You mentioned Yan Gomes, who's been hitting great, and you mentioned Carlos Santana, who you said you have a lot of confidence in, as do I. At Let's Go Tribe, though, he seems to be a sort of divisive figure. There's at least a vocal minority who seems pretty disappointed in Santana, which sort of drives me nuts because I feel like he's maybe the team's best hitter and has been for a couple of years. How do you feel about it? I mean, you said you're still confident in him. Do you think – so I guess then what I'd rather ask is the people who aren't confident, do you think they're undervaluing the walks? Do you think they were expecting him to be a 300 hitter? What do you think causes people to have such a wide range of opinions about Santana?
Well, I think it goes back to the walks are not sexy. He will probably never be a 300 hitter. I don't think his minor league numbers ever really showed that per se, but he's always been able to take a walk. He works pitchers very well as a hitter. He's a switch hitter. I mean, he doesn't really have a weakness on either side of the plate as far as I know. Of course, I don't have the splits open in front of me. But I think it's also because he looks so poor behind the plate most of the time that people turn off on that side of it, so it kind of bleeds over to the offensive side. I mean, the guy leads our team in OPS and OPS plus this year, pretty much.
Right.
So I mean, he's obviously the best hitter, if not in the top two or three. But I honestly would rather have Gomes catching full time. He's a better defender. He's hitting very well. He's proved himself this year. So I know I posted this a couple weeks ago, but I don't know how many people saw it. I think he would be the best trade candidate in the offseason. I know it's blasphemy to trade your best hitter, but he's basically a guy without a position. So unless you want to make him a full-time
I remember you posting that, and I was one of the people who replied to it. Because I see the point you're making, and there were definitely other people who were on your side of things. What do you, if they were to trade him, what would you envision them going after? Because I guess my concern is it doesn't, to me, make sense to trade him for prospects because you'd sort of be punting next year, and that doesn't make any sense. And it seems like it's usually pretty hard to get, you know, current value for current value in a deal. What would you like to see the Indians target if they were going to shop him?
Well, let's see. I think our biggest holes really are a true first baseman or a corner outfielder that can actually hit for power.
Right.
I mean, I know Rayburn's done great in part-time duty, but I think he would really regress to the mean if you played him full-time. So you need a guy that actually can get out there and hit a little, maybe strike, kind of like a guy, I don't want to say Adam Dunn, but somebody who could actually just hit home runs, drive in runs, and not worry about having a lot of strikeouts. Because right now we don't really have a true power hitter on the team. I mean, look at
right.
the number of home runs. We don't have anybody with more than 20. We need
right.
a guy that sort of sear into the heart of the order. Some guy that'll hit fourth all the time, and we don't have that. So that's what I would target. I don't think that's available though.
Right. Where do you see Nick Swisher spending most of his time over the next, you know, 3 or 4 years with the team? Defensively, I'm talking about, not in terms of the lineup. You know, at first and right, DHing.
I believe next year he'll be the full-time first baseman, but by the second year or the third year of his contract, I think he'll become a full-time DH. He just can't throw anymore from the outfield, I don't think. And hopefully we get a true first baseman. So.
Yeah, and I'm with you on Yan Gomes. I think having earned the right to sort of go into next year as the primary catcher, I guess to me, you know, and who knows what might be out there in a trade, but to me, Santana's bat's good enough to, you know, he doesn't have as much power as you'd like from a DH, but I feel like his bat's good enough that if he's, you know, catching a couple games a week, playing first once or twice a week while Swisher, you know, maybe spends one day in the outfield and DHs once, and then Santana DH. I feel like his bat's good enough for that. And he's my favorite player in the team, so, in some ways I'm biased against trading him.
I totally understand. I'm not saying we should. I was mainly saying, well, it doesn't hurt to ask around and see what other teams
right.
would be willing to give up. And if you found
sure.
a deal that you liked, go ahead and do it, because I don't think losing him, if you get fair return for him, I don't think it really kills your chances next year, especially if you get a power-hitting corner outfielder or corner infielder back.
Well, and again, because, I mean, a lot of his value has been tied up in the fact that he was able to play catcher for two-thirds, you know, of the games, and even as a pretty maybe mediocre, to put it politely, catcher, you know, just filling that spot has some value. So I guess if they were to try to trade him, it's got to be to a team who still views him as a catcher and places some value on that, which I'd still rather they don't. But I do think Yan Gomes should be the primary catcher. And it seems, you know, in September, and I don't know if it's because now they have a third catcher on the roster and they feel more comfortable DHing Santana or what, but it does seem like Gomes is, you know, is moving into that primary role. He's playing a lot more than he was.
Exactly.
Which is good. If you were Terry Francona or he were fired and you replaced him for the next couple of weeks, any other lineup changes, guys you'd like to see more or less of?
Honestly, I'd like to let Chisenhall play full time the rest of the year just to see if he can finally break through. Other than that, Rayburn should be playing a little bit more often, but I think that's mainly due to an injury. I don't know what else you would do really, because Avila's can't really play full time over Drews, even though Drews is really struggling.
Yeah.
So I don't see any other changes that you could honestly do.
So, yeah, I think especially not knowing, right? Yeah, I think, you know, Rayburn not knowing what he's capable of doing right now. Drew Stubbs is driving me nuts. He's been horrible at the plate, and he's not playing good defense. You know, in yesterday's
it's supposed
game,
to be a calling card.
Right, and you know that hasn't really been there either, and his bat's been so bad lately. But you know, if Rayburn can't play out there right now, then there's not a whole lot you can do about it. You know, you could try Swisher out there, but I think we're probably stuck with Stubbs in at least that half-time role for the rest of the season. You mentioned Chisenhall, and it's funny. I was actually just kind of in preparation for tonight, looking at some things, and early this season when he was in Columbus, I was sort of leading the call to get him back up here, and then he mostly not continued to hit that well, or seemingly so. But I looked, and actually, his batting average is bad. His batting average on balls in play is terrible, which so at least some of his batting average is probably luck. But he's been hitting the ball pretty well in terms of, you know, his power numbers look good. He's got the, you know, the best isolated power numbers and the best slugging percentage of anyone in the team over the last month, which was a surprise to me to see. So I think you're right. I think as he's been somewhat disappointing, at least to me, in terms of what I was hoping to see from him this year. But I think I'd also gotten a little too down on him, and he's been better than I think most people probably realize.
Yeah, the way I'm looking at it, his ISO is, what, 160 for the year? And it's probably a little higher than that for the last month and a half. So
yeah,
that's pretty good.
I mean, I have the last 30 days from Fangraphs up right now, and his ISO for the last 30 days is 275. And now, partially, that's he's only batting 235, but his slugging is still 510. And again, his batting average on balls in play is only 214, which is at least partially bad luck.
And it looks like he's doing okay with the walks, too. I mean, 45 points between batting average and on base. But that's not bad at all.
He's never going to be Carlos Santana in terms of drawing walks, but, you know, he's not a total mess in terms of his plate control right now, it doesn't seem like. I think it's interesting how the narrative can sort of take over and, you know, and it colors your perception of a player, though. I think Chisenhall is someone a lot of Indians fans are down on right now. And that sort
I think that's partially due to Kipnis breaking out as fast as he did.
Right. And I think, you know, you look at Ubaldo Jimenez is another guy who a ton of Indians fans are still pretty down on. And it's like, you know, he's been the team's best player for 2 or 3 months now. You know, I guess
well,
since you say the end of it.
His numbers are that way, yes, but I honestly don't think he's been the best pitcher on the staff except for the last 3 to 4 weeks. I know his numbers have been great since the All-Star break, but he was still having trouble getting out of the fifth inning or getting to the sixth inning, I should say, that first month or so after the All-Star break. And he uses a lot of pitches. He was nibbling quite a bit. I haven't seen any of his last 3 or 4 starts other than the staff going with it. And he has been much better lately. So I will grant you that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I hear what you're saying in terms of not going deep into games. But, I mean, in comparison to the rest of the staff, even then he wasn't looking that bad. And, you know, his last 4 starts, like you said, when even, you know, the innings have been back up, his walks have been down. I don't know. I feel like right now, if the Indians were to find their way into that wild card game, I can't believe I'm saying this, but he'd be probably at worst, he'd be my second choice right now for who I'd want in that game. And a year ago, you couldn't have convinced me I would feel that way.
me either. There's no way
well,
after last
you,
year I would have thought he would made the playoff roster, let alone start the game.
Yeah, I sort of expected him to be out of the rotation once Trevor Bauer was, you know, was ready, which certainly that would have happened by, you know, mid-June. So much for that. But, well, if the Indians do get to a wild card game, is there a pitcher you'd most like to see on the mound for him?
If Masterson's healthy, I'd rather him go, just because I trust him to be more consistent. but Ubaldo would not be a bad choice at this point the way he is throwing.
Right. That's interesting. I think Masterson, for me, I think you're right. I'm less, if he's healthy, I'm less of afraid of a blow-up game from Masterson. But I also would be less expectant of a really good game. And not that he hasn't, you know, it's not that he hasn't pitched really good games. I guess if Masterson's out there, I'd expect 6 or 7 innings, 3 or 4 runs. And if Jimenez was out there, you could convince me of any range of possibilities from 8 shutout innings right now to getting knocked out in the 4th inning, having given up 7.
Yeah. Even with his dominance the last 3 weeks, that's still in the back of pretty much everybody's mind, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, well, I don't think the consensus would be that Ubaldo should be pitching. But I also feel like the offense has been so crummy. And I think if the Indians get one of the wild card spots, the offense is going to have to have picked up. But the way the offense is right now, I feel like, well, gosh, they're only going to score 2 or 3 runs. So I need a pitcher who might give me, you know, 7 shutout innings or only give up 1 run. But that one wild card game is probably getting a bit ahead of ourselves. On the other hand, why not get ahead of ourselves? So staying on the topic of a hypothetical wild card game. So, you know, maybe who you'd like to see pitch it. How about in terms of opponent? The Rangers are sort of seem solid for one of them, but they're crumbling right now. And I think they're actually only like a game or two ahead of the Rays. So they might fall. So you got the Rays, the Rangers, the Yankees, the Orioles, and the Royals. I guess those would be the potential opponents. Any preferred or unpreferred opponents?
Out of that grouping, well, I'm thankful it's not the A's because I don't think we have a shot against the A's pitching staff right now, no matter who it is that they decide to throw out. The Rangers, Darvish would probably carve us up, but if we play the Rangers, it's probably going to be in Texas, and I think we could hit better in Texas than at home right now. So I would like our chances a little better if it was in Texas.
The other thing, especially with the Rangers stumbling, I think a lot of fans imagine that every team's best pitcher is on the mound for that wild card game, but if they're still fighting to get into that game, depending on how they rotate, it's not like they're going to rest Darvish, you know, on Saturday or Sunday before the playoffs if they don't have it locked up. So it's not a sure thing that they'd be facing Darvish. And, you know, after him, their pitching is, I think, less intimidating.
True. But the Yankees pitching stuff doesn't scare me at all right now.
The Yankees,
Nova is the only guy that would potentially shut us down. The rest of them, I think, are all very hittable.
I do, too, in a vacuum, but you put, you know, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, everyone's like, oh, the Yankees are dead, ha, ha, ha. And I kept saying, like, nope, I refuse to count them out. And I think it's a semi-irrational just hate for them that I refuse to believe they're dead until they're dead. But the logical part of me knows they're not as good as Texas. They're not as good as Tampa Bay. I want nothing to do with the Yankees in the playoffs in any way, shape, or form. I'd rather face any of those other teams than the Yankees because it would make me so sick to my stomach to see the Indians play them and then lose to them.
Yeah, well, historically, I think we've actually done pretty well with the Yankees in the playoffs, so I honestly don't think that's a big deal. I think we could beat the Yankees in a one-game playoff. But for the other team I would rather play would maybe be the Rays, just because I know that they hit just as bad as we do.
So. They've been stumbling. They certainly wouldn't look like a team. Well, who knows what they'll do in the next 2 weeks. But, yeah, they haven't been playing well lately.
So, but I wouldn't want to face the Royals. Because honestly, there's no way both us and the Royals make the playoffs.
wouldn't that be crazy, though, if the AL Central had both wild card teams?
That would be hilarious, but very far-fetched.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, between the Rangers and Rays, at least one of them is going to make it. They're not going to both totally fall out. I wouldn't be surprised if one of them falls out. But How about, do you, not, I mean, you can certainly talk about the Indians facing them, but more generally, beyond the wild card game, any teams you think look particularly good right now? And if you had to go to Vegas and put money on someone to win the World Series?
If I was a betting man, as much as I hate the Tigers, it's got to be them. They've got the best team top to bottom. But that doesn't always work in the postseason, as we well know.
No, in fact, it doesn't even usually work, I don't think, in baseball. Which is why, you know, I think for any team, for the Indians, just get into the playoffs because, you know, unlike the NBA, you know, anything sort of really can happen. I think the worst team that makes the playoffs probably still has something like an 8-10% chance of winning it.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
You know, whereas if you sneak into the NBA playoffs as an 8 seed, you've got about a 1 in 1,000 chance of winning it.
I know there's some discussion about whether or not this new format is the playoff. It is the playoffs, is not the playoffs.
Right.
Is it a play-in game? Is it not a play-in game? I honestly could care less what everybody calls it. The historical records will show it as a playoff game.
Yep.
It's game number one of the playoffs. It's not game 163 for a tiebreaker to get into the playoffs. So that's the way the records are going to show. That's the way I feel about it. I don't care if it's a playing game or not. It's one more chance to prove yourself.
And so then the semantics of aside, and I generally feel the same way. I don't care. Count it how you want it to count it. It gives you a 50-50 chance of getting to the LDS. And but does that mean, are you happy that MLB added it? Do you think the playoffs are better for it?
I actually do like it because I fought for years. The AL East got to ride their financial means to get two teams into the playoff every year. This makes that second-place team actually fight to stay in the playoffs.
Right. And also gives the teams that don't have as much money in that division more of a chance to get in, too. I mean, you look at, the Rays have gotten in the single game. I think Baltimore would have been tied for it anyway. So neither of them quite needed that second spot, but it certainly gives them a better chance. And then gives, the Indians and Royals. Generally, I think I'm in favor of it. And I like that it makes the division, winning the division a little more. I think one of my big things about baseball is that, in probably American sports in general, regular seasons tend to get sort of forgotten, unless it's an individual record that gets broken or something like that. I think it's sort of a shame, you play a six-month season and no one really cares who won a division or who had the best record. Playoffs are a lot of fun. I think a division title, a playoff appearance, a fan base should be proud of that and happy about it.
Oh, for sure.
I wouldn't want to see the playoffs expanded any further than this. But I think with the current number of teams and the way that the divisions are lined up, it took me a little while to decide, but I've come around to feeling like I like this system. One other thing I want to talk about, since it came up today after today's game, Michael Bourne, I don't know even exactly what he was asked. I've only seen his quotes in response, but he must have been asked something about attendance. And it doesn't seem like he, Chris Perez kind of ranted about it that last year, 2 years ago? I can't remember now. Bourne seemed to be a little more tactful about it, but I think he said, we'd like to be supported a little bit more if we could. We're two games out in the hunt for the second wild card. It's been a long time since there's been a team in the wild card here. And he went out a little bit, and he said, we need that support. Attendance in Cleveland seems to be kind of a big thing. That the plane dealer had a big story and poll about it, and why aren't fans showing up? So two-part question. One, do you care that fans aren't showing up? And two, do you think there's much more the Indians can do to change it?
Well, seeds. Tough question. Do I care? On a minimal level, yes, I do, because I think it looks poor when you show crowd shots and there's like nobody there.
Sure.
But looking at the attendance numbers over the last week of all the teams, they're all way down. So it's just a matter of ratios, I guess. So, yeah, it looks bad, but I think everybody's having a tough time this year. I know
there have been reports that TV and radio ratings are pretty high for Indians games right now, so it's not like the team's being totally ignored.
True. It's just it is tough nowadays. I mean, the financial straits that most people are in just doesn't give them extra cash to go catch a game.
Right.
Even 10 years ago when I used to go to the Oakland Coliseum to see the Indians play, I could get a ticket for $5-$10. And
yeah.
ride BART for basically $5 or something like that. I mean, that was it. I mean, but you can't do that nowadays. It costs you at least 20 plus parking plus food and beer or whatever it is. It's a chore to go to a game. It really is. I really enjoy the baseball experience, so I'm willing to pay that kind of money to go see a game. But not everybody can. So
right.
And if this was 7 years ago and this season happened, I think you would have had a lot of walk-up fans. I do believe there's a strong apathy in Cleveland, even though I don't live there. I hear it from family. I hear it from the site. But 7 years ago, people weren't camped in front of their 60-inch TVs with all the digital toys that they can play with nowadays.
Right.
It was still an event to go to a baseball game. But most of the sports are really morphing into a TV-friendly product, not a live product. And that's unfortunate for what it is, but I think that's the way the sports are all headed, not just baseball.
Yeah. No, I think you're right in terms of, you know, the home entertainment aspect of it. You know, and that's why I think it's worth looking at the TV ratings and things like that, because you know, they give you a little different picture of how things are going. And, you know, who are any of us to begrudge someone else how they spend their money or how they choose to follow the team or if they follow the team or not? And, you know, sure, it'd be great if there were, you know, tens of thousands of rabid fans and, you know, sellouts every night. But I don't know. I can't work up that much anger or frustration about it.
But there's nothing I can do about it. So
yeah,
not much else to yep. do about it.
If I could snap my fingers and put an extra 20,000 fans a night in, sure, but I can't, and I'm not going to lose sleep over it. And you know, if they make the playoffs this year and start off well next year, I do think next year you'd see, you know, a legitimate bump. But it will be what it will be. And I hope Perez caught a lot of flack for it, I think probably in part because of his tone about it. And as I said, Bourne seems to have been a little more, you know, the question was sprung on him and he gave a probably honest but fairly measured response. And hopefully I don't think he should catch any grief for it. All right, well, we're running low on time.
Okay.
But thank you for joining me. And
no problem.
Hopefully we'll have a lot of good baseball to follow the next couple, more than a couple weeks, the next 5 or 6 weeks. And yeah, I hope you'll join me again maybe sometime in the off season, and maybe when there's not actual games going on, we can talk a little more Indians history. I know that's a big interest of yours, is Indians and baseball in general history, and something I'm really into too. That you know, again, I think off season I'd love to have you back on and get into some of that stuff.
Sure, I wouldn't mind doing that at all. Just a quick note on the historical side. I really believe that most of the younger fans of this generation don't really know much about what happened even 30 years ago in the sport. So my goal when I do a lot of the historical stuff is to show what happened to get where we are today.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm a grade school teacher, and history is one of my favorite topics to talk to the kids about, because I think if you can do it in an interesting way, I think it really does. You know, what you just said, how we got from there to here. I think in any subject, including baseball, can be really interesting. We will definitely talk again. And thanks so much for taking time from your night to join me.
Well, thanks for having me, and thanks for staying up late to do it.
No problem. Anytime.
All right, man.
Okay, again, that was Dean Klubnik, and this has been Let's Go Tribe. We've got four games in Chicago this weekend, which the last four games in Chicago went really well. Hopefully these will, too. Could really use at least three wins. Got Kluber going Thursday night, Salazar going Friday. It's an afternoon game, early start. And then Jimenez Saturday and McAllister Sunday. McAllister's had three pretty mediocre starts in a row. And he's going up against Chris Sale, who might totally dominate the Indians lineup. So be nice to win the first three and maybe have a little margin for error going into Sunday's game. I will be at Sunday's game, so if you're a Chicago area listener and want to meet up and have a beer before the game or between innings or something, you can shoot me an email or drop a comment at Let's Go Tribe. And then three games in Kansas City against the Royals. And the Royals are right in the thick of it the same way we are. So hopefully a week from now, the Indians have gone 5-2 or 6-1, and the Rays and Rangers have continued to flounder. And by the way, I can tell you, the Rays did lose tonight, so the Indians are still only a game and a half out of that second wild card spot and four games behind Texas. So the last two games have sort of sucked, but they're really still in the thick of things, and there's no reason to stop paying attention now. Anyway, this is Jason Lukart, and I'll talk to you next week.
I polish the leaves, make them greener.
The Karcher Window Vac. It's the easy way to clean your windows with no streaks or smears. Simply spray, wipe, and vacuum. And for a limited time only, buy a new WV5 from Karcher and receive £30 back when you trade in your old window vac. For full terms and conditions, visit KarcherPromotions.com. The Karcher Window Vac. Effortless cleaning power for streak-free windows.